If you look at what's happening in the past 40 years, for example, after the Khmer Rouge, we didn't have a normal generational transition. For example, we didn't have the older teachers teaching the next generations. We had a gap of teachers. We have the gap of artists. We had a gap of singers, musicians, you know, traditional dancers who can actually pass on those cultures and skills to the next generations. Many of the young generations born after the Khmer Rouge could not learn from their elder generations in all fields, as well as there's hardly any role models to be as examples for many of the young people. So a generation gap has had huge impacts on Cambodia. And even today, many of these lost art and cultures and knowledge continue to affect the country. But the biggest impact, I think, on the country is actually probably related to politics. What happened 40 years ago continue to be a date that it has been very, very divisive for the Cambodian populations. I think it's not just the fact that the Khmer Rouge regime ended 40 years ago, but the fact that how it was end. On the one side, I think if you look at the way we look at what happened on January 7, 1979, for some of the Cambodian people, they saw that as a day that ended the killing field, the genocidal regime. But the fact that it was actually done with the support of Vietnam, a historical enemy of Cambodia, for many of the Cambodian people, they still view it as a plot of Vietnam to invade Cambodia and occupy the country. Because of those two narratives, the country cannot heal and cannot move forward. And politics today seems to be all about the interpretations of what happened 40 years ago and not many of the issues that the country is facing now.
And so where are we at with reconciliation? I know the Khmer Rouge War Crimes Tribunal was established, and I know history was made when it ruled the Khmer Rouge had committed genocide, but we've still only seen three convictions. So has justice been achieved?
I think the tribunal is trying to bring some sort of justice, but more importantly, some answers to what happened 40 years ago. But for many of the Cambodian public, I think the facts and stories and evidence provided by the tribunal has not been that significant because they seem to be obsessed with their own conspiracy theories, and they seem to trust these theories that's playing out by well-known politicians that they like and trust much more than evidence provided in court. And so I think the impact from the tribunal has been very, very insignificant. I think we can only tell what's going to happen in the next 20 years, but I think as it stands now, I think the impact of the tribunal on not just the reconciliations, but also on understanding what happened, I think that impact has been very, very minimal, and the Cambodian public has not paid much attention to that, and they continue to basically believe in whatever they believe for a long, long time. And that is, as I said, is how they view that date that happened 40 years ago, and who therefore determine also who they would trust as politicians to protect or defend Cambodia independence and national security. And that's been important for Cambodian politics for the past 40 years and will continue to be important in at least the next 10 years.
You mentioned the generational gap there. Cambodia's obviously been through massive economic and social change since the days of the Khmer Rouge. Can you just paint a picture for us of what life is like for Cambodians today in terms of political and economic freedoms? Is there a lot of opportunity?
Cambodia is actually now a true capitalist society. The state, the government is not controlling as it used to be. The economy has been growing. There's definitely a growing middle class, but just like many rising economy or rising capitalist economy, there's also a widening gap between the rich and the poor, particularly the top few percent of the country has been dominating the Cambodian economy, but also the gaps seems to skew in their favor in a significant way. Cambodia is also one of the most corrupt countries on earth, which means that has also fueled a lot of the discontent, public discontent, has also been on the rise in some sense, while the economy is growing and many of the Cambodian public and the Cambodian people themselves benefit from it. But at the same time, I think the income inequality, the wealth inequality is so stark and so in your face that I think many of the Cambodian public are starting to question the development models. And I think that has been giving rise to many of the discontent and that surfaced in 2013 and continue to surface today. And if you read many of the messages that they post on, they share on their Facebook post, for example, it'll continue to be one where I think many of the populations are still not happy with the status quo or the current government.
Right, so the current Prime Minister, Hun Sen, he's been in power since 1985. He was a former Khmer Rouge commander who defected and ultimately helped to overthrow the regime. Is he a divisive figure?
I think he is a divisive figure. I don't think he's that popular. And that is because I think the prime minister, as well as his ruling party, has been trying to benefit from the narrative of being the people responsible for ending the Khmer Rouge and therefore save the remaining survivors from killing and executions and starvations. I think they tried to benefit for way, way too long. And given that we have a Cambodian population, many of which probably at this stage, 80% of whom have never lived through the Khmer Rouge, the benefit or the gratitude they tried to continue to benefit it from, I think, no longer exists. And so you're talking with a different population, a different demographic who care very little about what you have done or what you didn't do 40 years ago. And I think this notion of being a former Khmer Rouge who came back and helped end the Khmer Rouge itself, and that got lost now in the past 40 years. And I think they need to start to speak to the current populations who is maybe asking questions about their futures as well as starting families and therefore asking about their own children's futures as well. And I think that's actually quite important, where I felt that the politicians, particularly the prime minister himself, seems to be blinded to. And unless they start to look to the futures, I think they're going to be out of touch from the Cambodian young population.
Sure. And does this young population, 70% of Cambodians are aged under 30, do they feel this lost generation, this gap and this loss of culture and language that you described?
Certainly. I mean, many of the people still look back to the golden era of the 1960s, although it wasn't truly a golden era, but the fact that every regime that came after that has been the Khmer Rouge and then the Civil War of the 1980s, the poverty of the 1990s. So they look back at the golden era of the 1960s. So they're desperate to build a new identity and regain that golden period, for example, of music and culture and films and enlightenment, being educated and be exposed again. I think the Cambodian people is desperate for a recognition some sort that we are that we can stand tall and be proud of it. I think that the national identity is going to dominate Cambodian politics for the next 20 years. I think many of the young people seems to care very much about international perceptions of the country as well as of the people of themselves, and the fact that they're also traveling quite a lot more now. They're much more exposed. They compare themselves as well to other countries in the region, and because of that, I think they want to stand tall and be proud of when they travel and when we receive millions of guests as well.